Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, on the wonderful UK Health Radio. Each week, we bring you the best news, views and interviews with the leaders, clinicians, CEOs and founders that are changing the face of the healthcare industry in the UK and beyond. As regular listeners know, I'm a CEO and founder of a health tech company myself called PopDoc. We allow anybody, or we are delivering digital pathways via the mobile phone for the first time, so including cardiovascular testing, including our PopDoc lipid test. PopDoc also support the show, so thank you very much to them for all of the support. Also, as ever, thank you very much if you're listening live on UK Health Radio. We're up at like 60,000 people a show now, which is fantastic. Thanks for tuning in. Also, thank you if you are listening on podcast platforms. So Spotify, Google, Apple, Amazon Music, we're up on all of them. Also, all UK Health Radio shows are now up on the UK Health Radio channel on all of those, or you can just come direct to the Health Tech Hour show. And finally, if you're watching us on YouTube or watching one of the clips that we put out, then brilliant. So last week we had a great show. I'd recommend you check it out. LifeARC, Melanie Lee came on, CEO of LifeARC. They're giving away £1.3 billion in funding for motor neurone disease and other preventative or preventable diseases. And that's myself and Melanie had a great conversation about diagnostics and the value of diagnostics in, or diagnosis and making early diagnostics in certain disease areas. So one of the things that's held MND, motor neurone disease, back is the lack of a very early diagnostic test, which brings us very nicely on to today's guest, or this week's guest, is Hamish Grierson, who's the CEO and founder of Thriver. So Thriver have been one of the leading innovators in the home testing space or decentralized testing space in the UK, one of the leading companies to roll out COVID testing at home during the pandemic and step up to the plate and help the government deliver that program. And Hamish is widely renowned as one of the nicest men in the industry. So Hamish, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, Steve. Very hard to live up to that intro, but great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Good. I do a good intro. So where should we start? So I think obviously you and I have known each other for a little bit and have had a lot of, there's a lot of kind of similarities in how we think about the world, which is great. I think what would be helpful just to kick off, so we're kind of all on the same page, because there's a broad church of people that listen to the show. So how would you, because I know that Thriver has evolved and changed and grown and things like that. How different is Thriver now to what you thought it was when you started the company?
Probably the right place to start. It's also the perfect segue to clarify something. I'm a co-founder. I'm not the sole founder. And I'm very lucky that I started the business with Tom and Elliot rather than trying to do this on my own. Otherwise, I think I would be totally grey and probably dead. So how does the business deviate from, you know, what we thought it would be in the original days? I think actually in foundational purpose, it remains very similar to the original mission. And the thing that we observed back in 2015 is that actually most people do not understand what's really happening inside their bodies, full stop. And that causes a panoply of problems right across the continuum of people who are well until they are not, and people who are trying to get well who are currently sick. So we started off observing that that was a problem. I'm sure we have lots of commonality in that view, given what we both do. And to this day, I still think that that is a foundational problem, and making biodata a powerful part of everyday life, I think, is a mission that will stay true for us for time immemorial. I think practically the way that it differs in execution is that we started in 2016 as a direct-to-consumer brand, and we have evolved to, whilst we're continuing as a direct-to-consumer brand, to have what we call a B2B channel, which effectively is us making what we've created as a decentralized or at-home diagnostics platform available to third-party partners. And that ranges from, as you said, everyone from the Department of Health all the way to decentralized clinical trials, insurance, pharmacy, and on down.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, good. So there's a fair amount to unpick there. So like when you kind of were first thinking about the company back in 2015, I guess you started thinking about it in 2015, if you launched in 2016, give or take, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So somewhere in that kind of time frame. What was the next best available way that people were having blood tests done? What were you looking at thinking, Christ, that doesn't work?
Well, I mean, the folks who heard me talk about the genesis of the business will be bored of me telling this story, but the analog was the reason that ultimately we started the business. And it was Elliot, who had been getting fairly regular blood tests for 5-6 years already, maybe 7 years. And he'd been going to the GP, and this was someone who was monitoring an inherited condition, so he had a reason to go. And he would every 3 or 4 months go somewhere to a physical location nowhere near the office, required time off work to go and do it, and he would get a blood draw done, and the response would be, we'll contact you if there is a problem.
Yeah.
And that was just the way it was done. And entirely kind of good logic behind those principles and protocols, I'm sure, when they were created. But I'm not medical, as you know. I wasn't trained as a doctor. And so when I sat down as Elliot's manager originally, then friend, and I had myself become completely fascinated and fixated on all things health as a non-clinician, I just couldn't get my head around that. And it's worth remembering that sort of 2014-15 time, there were a number of pioneers in the fintech world who were building really consumer-centric products, you know, the Monzos, the TransferWises of this world, Revoluts, etc. And they were having adult-to-adult conversations with their customers, right? They were having a totally different assumed understanding or ability to understand baked into the product experience. And I thought that was fascinating and totally absent from what I was seeing in sort of traditional healthcare.
Right. And which was still like pretty paternalistic and like, don't worry, we know you're good. You know, don't ask that many questions. Just we'll call you.
100%. Yeah, that's right. And Elliot's example obviously is idiosyncratic to a known condition. Sure. The other side of the coin that I suppose always had looming large, I don't talk about it quite so much, but my mother passed away of a cancer diagnosis that was caught at stage 4, and consequently was irreversible. And the idea that you would simply arrive at that place struck me then as a 19-year-old as, you know, there was no reason that I would ever challenge that because I'd never thought about the healthcare system askance. But the longer I thought about it and the more interested in health I became, the more back to front that appeared to be. And you took a little glance at some of the statistics around adoption of the health check, let's say.
Yeah.
And they are somewhere between 15% and 25%, depending on the region.
And in some areas, they're even lower, like in some of the really kind of underserved areas, it's very, very, it's low. Yeah. And look, I think it was a well-meaning program, clearly, like it makes sense, but the delivery of it just isn't necessarily as good or efficient or successful as it could be, I think.
No, I think that's exactly right. And I want to take a beat just to recognize this sounds like I'm just dunking on the NHS, which is, you know, absolutely not the case. If you look at what the NHS was designed to do and the population dynamics at the time that it was trying to do the thing that it was set up to do, we are in a completely different technical, social, economic, environmental reality. And to assume that it can deliver the mandate that it was setting out to deliver, despite everything else changing, I think it's just unfair.
Yeah.
And I think as a consequence, you know, doctors are finding it very difficult within the system. And I think things have therefore got to change.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that stuff like the NHS health check makes so much sense conceptually, but that's for me is one of those ones where the magic or really the kind of deciding factor is in the delivery of it. You know, the content of the health check itself is not mind-blowingly innovative, unless you would disagree. I mean, it's a cardiovascular health screening, right? Like it's, you know, height, weight, yeah, smoking status, previous health conditions, you know, blood pressure, cholesterol testing. That stuff's been around for a while. But how do you get more than 15% of a population, eligible population, to do it? Is it when it's very hard to get an appointment at a GP's, or very hard to go, it's inconvenient for people, or however it ultimately is done, is quite hard, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, if we were 25 years behind where we are asking this question, we would be wondering whether, you know, good UI, good UX, consumer centricity, maybe they are things that will turn out to be important. In 2023, those are questions we now know the answers to, right? Yeah. They are a given. And we've demonstrated in almost every corner of innovation, I think, other than healthcare, from mapping to financial services to transportation more broadly. I mean, you know, we just know that you can get to more people and get them to engage more meaningfully if you acknowledge what's going on inside their heads, basically. And that is an art and a science, but it's a really well-trodden path. And I think we're all basically just sitting there wondering what we can do to help advance the NHS towards a place where it's benefiting from some of those innovations.
So I had a call literally just before this, actually, with someone in our management group, and we were kind of kicking around the idea around, I don't know what you think about this, but discussions in the UK, when you work in the healthcare industry or health technology industry or medical technology, however you would define the industry that we're in, and kind of depends on what the kind of jargon of the day is, I guess, is it's very hard to avoid the kind of gravity of the NHS in how you talk about yourself and how you define yourself and what you think about. And like, actually, there's just this wide world out there, right? So like, the of all kinds of different people, the NHS is such a uniquely uniquely strong force in our country and in how we deliver health. I don't necessarily know if in any other country there's such an overwhelming sort of situation like that, where everything health related in effect broadly ends up getting parsed somewhat through what do the NHS think, or what's the NHS doing, or how is this different, or how does this impact the NHS? You know, I don't know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic. I mean, I think gravity is the right way to frame it. You know, gravity in the sense that they are the biggest buyer and the biggest payer. It's, as I see it, a massive double-edged sword, because at the other extremity, where you may argue the folks in North America are playing, there's probably a substantive commercial element that doesn't exist within the NHS that has a very different set of problems. And actually, if you look at the efficiency models, the NHS seems to be doing a better job overall. But it's a reality businesses like ours face into all the time. It is incredibly difficult to grapple with it. And I say it in inverted commas, because anyone who's ever tried to get going with quote unquote the NHS realizes really quickly that there's no such thing. No. And it needs to be the way that it is for it to operate in any way, shape or form. But it does make it a real challenge to grapple with. And that's notwithstanding, there are phenomenal people right throughout that organization who are, you know, hell bent on driving innovation and change, and they find it difficult for obvious reasons. I think the idea of us thinking outside of the UK and having to accept that it may be a pretty unique situation here is right.
And when you were like, just to jump back a bit, when you started the company, were you more geared around specific pathways or disease pathways, or were you more interested in breadth, as in through the way that we do this, anyone can test themselves for any single thing? Or were you set up and more interested in like, well, hold up a second, this is just, well, like, I give you an example, PocDoc, obviously, we're very geared around cardiovascular disease right now, partly because of our technology lends itself that way, partly for other reasons. It's a great, it's a really, you know, vibrant, exciting, promising space to be working in, and that pathway lends itself to what we're doing really well. So was there something like that for you when you started Thriver, or was it more around, like you said before, about the breadth of biodata suddenly being available to everybody? It's at our fingertips now, and we can actually provide that access.
It was definitely more the latter than it being particularly orientated around the specific condition area like PocDoc has been. And I say that because when we thought about where within, I suppose, healthcare and well-being we wanted to play to begin with, our early view was, if you're going to change the tide, you have to swim upstream. And swimming upstream ultimately looks like preventative, participative, yeah, you know, doing more at the currently untested level or stage.
Yeah.
And the reality for us, when we thought about how to add value in at that end of the spectrum, was actually there isn't one particular area that is better or worse than the others that we wanted to get involved with. So we ended up going more broad than picking a singular condition area. The one big caveat, though, is we from day one were quite careful to think about what a good, quote unquote, test would look like. Right. And if there was, you know, sensitivity or specificity concerns, if there were downstream diagnostic concerns, if we felt like we couldn't do a good job of an end-to-end pathway that really needed an end-to-end pathway, then we wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because we simply felt like if we, you know, if nothing exists, then nothing is the current status quo, whether that's good or bad. If we're going to come in and be new to something, we need to be able to do it really well.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And actually, interestingly, we're about to get into deepening some of the pathway access with things like access to doctors through our platform. So we're sort of we're treading in that direction. It's obviously taking a long time, but we're heading in that way.
You picking up some of the doctors that may or may not be leaving companies that may or may not run with Schmabalon.
Can't comment. Only I knew who you were talking about.
Well, look, I think that's really interesting. So let's just kind of like, so when I know that from some of my conversations with people in government, they speak really highly of how Thriver performed during the pandemic. And one of the areas that they highlight was your ability to, and I guess it's sort of like something that from the outside looking in, maybe people don't really realize about the complex logistics around the type of business that you have and how that's a massive value add in effect, right? The ability to just manage the logistics around the entire process, right?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. And, you know, the reason that we created Thriver Solutions, which has its own face, its own brand, its own presence online, thriversolutions.com, if you want to have a look on online, as if you're looking for it as the audience, was for that very reason. And, you know, we ultimately, because we'd started in the direct-to-consumer space and had to build for our own benefit a huge amount of technology solutions to all of the problems that we encountered. Candidly, we didn't know we were going to encounter any of them when we set the business up. And if you told me what we were going to encounter,
believe you me, if someone had told me some of the problems that we've encountered, I would have thought twice about what I was doing, put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, you know it better than anyone, right? And so we sort of stumbled into these problems, and because we were a technology business, we had to build solutions for them so that we had the solution so that we could continue to deliver a great service for our customers. And so in a sense, we'd sort of we'd had to eat our own dog food, to use the sort of engineering heuristic, from day one. And what we'd built was this platform that had integrated the elements of the diagnostics ecosystem, from a federated network of UCAS accredited labs to the fulfillment partners to the end-to-end tracking across the postage network to customer support to the admin portal that doctors could log in to provide the commentary, the CE marking and regulatory oversight, the understanding of how to optimize for failure rates. We ultimately ended up building kit linking software that would run with our fulfillment partners, who we now work with really, really closely. So we've created this this really IP rich platform. And as I say, to begin with, we were consuming that to serve customers directly. And what became clear is that if you're a partner, and actually we got into what we call B2B probably in 2018, so it was, you know, pretty early on. Mm-hmm. And there was an amazing set of pioneers at the Royal Brompton Hospital, some brilliant people, Dr. Anand Shah and a handful of others. And they approached us to say, hey, look, we've got this immunocompromised patient group with cystic fibrosis. We'd like to stop them from coming in to get the testing if possible. We are putting together some other elements of an at-home solution, including sort of telemedicine and online consults. Again, this is whatever, 2-3 years pre-pandemic, and we'd like to use the testing.
Doesn't that seem like 1,000 years ago? Do you know what I mean? I can barely remember a time when I hadn't thought about what a pandemic was.
This is the sort of black mirror reality of our time. I had this conversation with someone the other day, and it feels most bizarre that it feels as bizarre as it does, if that makes sense.
So
we sort of started this journey into powering partners who wanted to benefit from what we built. So we started working with the Royal Brompton. We got that turned on really quickly, and because we had what they needed on the shelf. And that market was pretty slow because there were some private clinics, there were some other hospitals, similar sort of use cases, and we sort of fairly slowly marched through with those partners up until the pandemic landed. And when we got into discussions with the Department of Health, what became very clear as they were grappling with the pandemic was, from the antibody testing perspective, they wanted to find a single partner and have one organization manage that incredibly complicated supply chain. And that's what we'd created. Now, we didn't know that that was going to be a problem that they would have or that we would be able to solve. But, you know, fortunately, it turned out that what they needed was a very close proxy to what we were able to provide them. And that's exactly what we did. So we ended up managing millions of antibody tests. And that was an important source of data to understand the seroprevalence levels across the country. And we were actually talking about this internally the other day. It was this totally amazing, bizarre experience. Because if you set up this sort of B2B Thriver Solutions division of the business, in 20 years time, you might be like, one day, you know, we might be able to power big Department of Health programs where they're doing mass surveillance programs. It's like basically our first.
Yeah.
I mean, it was actually, because we'd done it from 2018. But, you know, in terms of scale, it was just this total behemoth of a thing. And I have to say, I was just immensely proud of the team, because they, you know, it's a given now, right? We with hindsight, everyone just expected this to happen, but everyone had to bend double to stand the program up and maintain it. And it was because it was kind of, we forget, but it was a wartime footing. You just get it done.
Yeah. Absolutely crazy. I've never seen anything like it.
It was people's time to sort of stand up and be counted or not. And the team were amazing. It really, you know, to the person, put the effort in to make sure that it worked. The system got the pressure test to end all pressure tests.
Yeah.
And here we are, 2023.
Right.
Weird, so distant memory.
My producer is waving at me. So we're going to go for a commercial break and then we'll be back after a couple of minutes with Hamish Grierson, CEO and co-founder, not sole founder, of Thriver. And I want to get onto some of the stuff to more dig into what you're doing around Thriver Solutions and this bio data, because I know that you've got a lot of thoughts about how that can be used for prevention, which is clearly where, you know, things have to stop. Well, they are already moving, but clearly that's one of the ways we can alleviate pressure on any healthcare system, but particularly the NHS. So we'll be back in 2 minutes on this week's Health Tech Hour.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my guest this week, Hamish Grierson, CEO and co-founder of Thriver. So before the break, you were going through how really you'd already built this incredible, clinical diagnostics logistics platform and all of the back end infrastructure behind it when COVID started. And so how post COVID have you been using that as part of, I think you call it now Thriver Solutions, and what is it that's moving on that front? Because I know you've got lots of exciting things in that front, and how does it kind of tie into the prevention agenda?
Yeah, so Thriver Solutions coexists with Thriver.co, which is the direct-to-consumer arm of the business that we were talking about before. And Thriver Solutions, in ambition, is about creating a platform that can power third parties, that can support any kind of test at a place and a time that's convenient for the individual and delivered with all of the appropriate quality, security and safety that anyone would care about. And you know, in effect, in the same way that Stripe made payments available to a raft of third-party providers and abstracted away all of the complexity, but actually with a huge amount of integrity required in the product that they created because they were dealing with money. We want to create effectively that black box for diagnostics so that we can power third-party use cases. And to your point on prevention, I think it is a given now that if we're going to turn the tide on the rising cost of healthcare and to do the thing we talk a lot about internally, which is improving health span and the proportion of life that you live with good health, hence the name Thriver, you have to start. That's legitimate, by the way. I didn't just make it up.
Yeah.
You have to start getting appropriate, you know, we can talk about over-testing in a minute, but yeah, appropriate diagnostics into people's hands at the right time. And that is going to be delivered through a raft of providers and channels. And the one thing that I'm as confident on as I've ever been is there is going to be no panacea here. You know, the reality is that some people will want to test at home and be comfortable doing that. As the technology around at-home testing gets better, that population will expand. But as we step towards that being a reality, omni-channel solutions, I think, will be the way to go. And that means you will have, in addition to the people testing at home, a group of people who may want to have a nurse come to them. You may have people who want to drop into a physical location for an assisted collection of some type, of some kind. So, yeah, I think, you know,
that was,
it won't be diagnostics alone, but there's a big role for it to play.
That kind of blended approach was really important for our NHS partners as well when we started the discussions with them, which was, you know, their perception was that all PocDoc was wanting to do was to allow people to test themselves at home, which is obviously, I think that there's a cohort of people that will want to do that and can do that, and that will be successful. But actually, we've always been interested in how providing greater access, flexibility, convenience in any location massively increases the number of people that can get tested, right? So like, whether it's a mosque or a community center, how can you deliver diagnostics in those locations to the same level and quality, convenience, efficiency, and value both to the system and to the patient as going to the GP, right? Like how you
exactly.
you can't, if anyone says this, then and we love the NHS and we're huge supporters and we've got lots of GP advisors and all that good stuff, which I know you do too. So that, like, to your point earlier, this is not about banging on the NHS at all, but the idea, if you agree with the thesis that the number of people having tests for various things needs to increase, then the solution to that cannot be to get more people into GP surgeries.
It just can't be. No. And there's a fascinating body of work that I was alerted to fairly recently that the Tony Blair Institute, I believe, is at least partially responsible for driving, which is looking not just at diagnostics, but some of the preventative vaccines. So some of the sort of cardiovascular vaccines, for example, and how do you package up in a non-GP surgery delivered program, a come and, you know, get the shot, get tested, understand what you need in a, you know, fairly short space of time and critically in a way that is convenient and cost effective. And that, I think, is the kind of innovation that is going to have to happen, as you say, if we are using the GP delivery mechanisms, they become rate limiting very quickly. So, yeah, we've got to find ways around it.
What were the vaccines for? What cardiovascular conditions were the vaccines for? That's super interesting.
Yeah, I mean, so I confess that this was literally last week that I was alerted to it. Yeah. But the types of vaccines that they're talking about last for something like 12 months from what the research has indicated. And it is a massive, we're talking, you know, tens of percentage point improvement on your CVD risk.
Wow.
And likelihood, therefore, within a 12-month stretch of getting a heart attack or stroke hit you.
Wow. So it's not really a vaccine, but they're calling it a vaccine because they don't know what to call it, sort of thing.
Correct. Yeah, I this is the thing, right? Like,
what is a vaccine? The same what does that mean, right? It stops you getting something. That's what I think a vaccine is.
And I think that's probably why they're calling it a vaccine, right? Because technically, if COVID was a health problem and a heart attack is a health problem, technically the thing that you get put in the side of your arm that stops you getting that thing for a period of time is a vaccine. But I'm no clinical pathologist. Not a vaccine expert.
No, because like obviously you remember when the vaccine was first mooted for COVID, it was like, it'll stop people getting it. And then it was like, no, it won't stop people getting it, but it will just make it a lot less severe, which is, you know, all well and good. That makes sense. So like, that doesn't stop you getting it. So why wouldn't something that massively reduces your risk of having a heart attack not be classified as a vaccine? For the purposes of the regulator, they're both classified as a drug. So I don't think it really matters from a regulatory perspective. It's more about how it's sold to the public, I guess.
And how it's delivered, right? And I think the...
Right. Yeah, how it's delivered. Right, exactly. Is it delivered through NHS as a vaccine, which is one route, or is it delivered slightly differently? Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, and look, I think if you'd indulge me to sort of jump in the time machine and zip forward, you know, a few more years, I think the fascinating thing that I know we probably share is a thing we get excited about is the the difference between, and I'm talking about this because we're talking about drug development and discovery here, at least on the vaccine side, the currently quite hard line between the sort of life sciences and research world, where they are sort of butting up against increasingly challenging business models as they pursue the development of new drugs, and what we consider the sort of proactive preventative healthcare agenda, I believe will become a single industry.
Right.
Because if you think about a couple of the key things that are determining the success or failure of drug development, patient recruitment, good, regular, accessible, accurate data, the ability to re-engage people, attrition rates off trials, convenience. Actually, you could parlay those almost directly into some of the challenges with the wellness agenda. Why don't people understand what's going on inside their bodies and take action that's appropriate? Is it accessible? Are they engaged? Do they want to come back? Do they believe that the data is accurate? You know, wearables are often in the kitchen drawer because that last one, you know, if it isn't really buttoned down, starts to get people to wonder whether there's a real value exchange happening.
Yeah.
So wouldn't it be amazing if life sciences came out of that place of being perceived as, you know, in the corner, or, you know, almost deliberately quite black hat and cloaked to no, not at all. It's really straightforward. We've got to find this group of people so that we can advance this type of medication. And hey, medication may start to mean something other than just drug in the fullness of time. It might be nutrition intervention or exercise intervention,
yeah, or a digital intervention, like their digital intervention now.
Absolutely, like closed loop medicine and folks are developing.
Yeah, shout out to Hakeem Yadi, another HealthTech Hour previous guest, another HealthTech Hour alumni.
I was on the email to Hakeem earlier today. Hello, Hakeem.
Great. Good.
If you're listening,
I hope you included his MBE in that, his official title.
I don't know what I did. If I did, Hakeem Yadi MBE. Hello, sir. yes, I just get this real sense of excitement that there's a platform, and I think we've got the direct-to-consumer brand and we've got the B2B platform to be able to bring those two things together. You know, we're ultimately trying to work through that with some of the pharma partners and CROs and innovative research folks out there. But wouldn't it be amazing, right? You'd end up with this, I think, brilliant combination of two otherwise fairly siloed places. Now, clearly, got to bring the customer with you. You've got to be transparent as to what you are and aren't doing with their data. You know, getting this wrong would be terrible, and people, I think, would rightly be up in arms. But I think people have developed a sense of optimism and a sense of trust. And I think the pandemic is partly responsible for pushing that forward. That you can use people's data responsibly and you can share the benefit with them. And I think that's pretty exciting.
I agree. So after the break, we're going to come back for the final part of the show. So we're going to do another commercial break now. We'll be back after 2 minutes with my guest this week, Hamish Grierson, CEO and co-founder of Thriver.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory, E bar gold.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Good, Hello and welcome back to the final part of this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my guest this week, Hamish Grierson, CEO and co-founder of Thriver. So before the break, we were talking about what the future could hold potentially from the kind of merging of life sciences, drug development, ongoing monitoring, diagnostics to try and make the whole thing more efficient, right? Which I think that your Thriver Solutions is pushing the boundaries there. How do you see the next few years developing in the sort of diagnostic space in the UK or anywhere? I mean, because again, obviously nothing's static. There's new tests coming out and new things being tested. I saw an article last week about the future of there's a new blood-based test for cancer that they think is extremely, extremely exciting and things like that. So is it that you know, whatever tests are developed, Thriver's in a great position to sort of integrate them into the platform? Or are you more interested or less interested in other in particular areas?
Yeah, I think there's a really clear sort of 6-month answer and then a clear bucket of things that we want to do over the sort of 2-year horizon that link back to actually where I think the industry is going. And over the 6 months, it's very much about, you know, what is the cutting innovation that's there now that we want to make available through the platform? So whether that's, you know, innovative ways to collect capillary samples from the body or other, as someone described it to me the other day, wet things that come out of a human.
Okay.
We can collect and analyze.
Yeah.
Other samples out of the sample matrix. You know, we've got a fairly steady drumbeat of putting those things on the platform. Over a 2-year horizon, I think it gets really exciting because, as you say, that field is far from static. And you've got, tumor cell identification. You have the need for diagnostics as companion diagnostics to titrate new forms of drugs that are becoming more mainstream. And you've got polygenic risk scores. You've got the combination, and of course there's a role for AI to play in understanding the value of the combination, but the combination of the data sources that we've already got and the new data sources that we're going to be getting to, you know, epigenetics, genetics, probably some form of more regular readout, whether that's from a continuous glucose monitor device or something that you may end up wearing on your wrist or, you know, somewhere in between. I think the combination of all those data sets is going to start to reveal some other really interesting, quote unquote, diagnostic insights. So I think, for us, short term, pretty straightforward. It's about just putting the current innovation into the product and making that available on a scalable basis to our partners. And when we talk about it internally, we talk about a path with partners where it starts ultimately with tools and then it gets to kind of collective innovation where we're doing things with them to advance the science. And actually some of that's really basic and some of it's really complicated. At the basic end, it's saying, hey, has this biomarker been validated for use in this way? Let's do that together. Let's do it quickly. Let's understand that this either is or isn't going to be workable. And you can therefore use it on a population that's relevant. And at the complicated end, it's by saying, hey, what is it that you want to be able to use the data that you've got for, and how might that interplay with the data that comes out of a diagnostic? That's a obviously much more complicated question to grapple with, and therefore things tend to move a bit more slowly. I think it's a very exciting space.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's kind of interesting. So we, when I go out and talk to people, and people always say, well, not they don't always say, but people are, oh, diagnostics, very crowded. I'm like, well, it kind of is and it's innocent. It depends how you look at it. You've got sort of stream one, which is anyone that's involved with using a laboratory to test for something, in effect. And it's either their own laboratory or they're using a chain of laboratories or whatever they're ultimately doing, they're using laboratories. Then there's sort of, I like to think of bucket number two, which is people that have built boxes that you put stuff into and it spits out an answer, and those boxes are sometimes bigger, smaller, in the middle, you know, like sometimes they're more in a lab setting, sometimes, you know, they might be a handheld thing, but it's basically a device that you're buying. And then the other piece is sort of how do you use smartphones to do it, right? And there's been a couple of companies like TestCard, healthy.io, focused on urine, and we're doing that with blood and delivering pathways and and things like that. But I think it's kind of interesting because every person ends up fitting into one of those sort of buckets. I guess the one that isn't in there is just sort of straight lateral flow where you're just reading it off the test.
Yeah, true. I think there's maybe a fourth bucket, albeit it's much more nascent, Steve, which is data only.
Yeah,
and
that's fair.
I think there's a reason that it's coming last, which is you need all the others to be able to create a data only product. But I actually, weirdly, I got pinged something by one of our investors the other day that was a data only product that's looking to use a combinatorial approach to finding kind of non-invasive insights. But yeah, look, I think that categorization is correct. But I also don't actually agree with the thesis that it's particularly crowded. And I say that because
I don't either. I just say that's what people say. I agree. I think it's not as crowded as people think.
And it's, I think the reason that you're right about that is on the one hand, you have massive laboratory providers, the centralized big labs who run the big box kit that you describe. And yet there are some small versions of those players, but they're all pretty established. And you have the NHS versions, and obviously there's the JV that the Doctor's Lab created, which is somewhere in between situation. And I think beneath that, either at the Olo style or Entia style boxes that are either bigger or smaller, all the way down to the actual little devices that might be doing something really narrow, there aren't that many players in that space, and certainly none that have gotten to sort of mainstream distribution.
No.
And then using stuff on the smartphone, there's only a handful of players. That,
yeah.
You Healthy, Test Card. I don't think there's many more. And forgive me if I've not named.
There's kind of like a healthy.io in the US called Scanwell, but they've mostly just focused on UTI. But it's the same thesis. Yes, no, maybe from UTI.
Yeah. And look, I think the reason that this is not one of the things that causes me to lose sleep at night is actually it's really difficult to get it right. Yeah. And it takes time and perseverance, and perseverance usually means cash behind you.
Let's be honest. Yeah, let's be honest about it.
And that narrows the pack. And there have been players that have come and gone aplenty in this space already over the course of the last 10 years. And I think that actually you're more likely to see a consolidation over the course of the next 5 years, especially with the funding markets being where they are. And especially in the UK, where everyone knows that entry to the NHS is the big buyer, isn't always that straightforward. And look, I think it's a unique dynamic.
For sure. So let's just touch on that final piece. We've got a few minutes left in the show, and I always like to ask entrepreneurs, particularly, what would your advice be to anyone or other entrepreneurs, whether they're a little bit earlier than you or just in general? What would your advice be generally at this point in time to anyone that's either thinking of starting a business or has a business, or what's got you through those dark times? Like, how have you got through those tough times?
So I think we are sitting with a completely new set of norms relative to 18 months ago within the fundraising stroke innovation landscape.
Yeah.
And I think it is incredibly important that people don't miss what this opportunity represents. And in one sense, it will be harder for people to raise money and get businesses going because there's less available access to VC cash in particular. However, if you look at some of the best businesses that have ever been built, they've often either been started or materially scaled in a downturn.
Yeah.
And part of the reason is that it drums phenomenal discipline into the founding teams in particular and the senior managers that they recruit. And I think it's important to just acknowledge that it's different now and that it's likely to stay this way for a period of time. And to lean into that, it's okay that it's different, and you know, ruining the fact that there's not a huge amount of change around.
You can't do anything about it. Like, you know, this is what it is.
No. No, exactly. And you know, challenges abound as a consequence, but ultimately I think that grappling with those dynamics and having a, you know, a full tilt, this is what I'm faced with and this is my plan therefore, I think is a really important and powerful thing to do.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that, I would agree with that. I think that's very profound. I think it's not about getting disheartened, but it's going to be harder to get what you're doing off the ground or to raise money or to continue. But that's not necessarily a terrible thing. You know, it's not in and of itself a bad thing. You just have to work a lot harder and be prepared to go through some tougher times.
Yeah, look, I'm sure there'll be people listening to this who are like, yeah, but you know, you had the great fortune to raise money during a boom market. How dare you say this? And they would be entirely justified in leveling that accusation. I would say that, you know, the truisms of the innovation agenda are just more true now, which means, you know, product market fit or listening to your customer or, you know, really understanding the problem that you can prove that you're solving. You've just got to be more sure of that now than you were before. And if you become sure and you can evidence that, there's always going to be a way to scale. But you're just going to have to be surer, because there'll be less cash, and cash is usually just forgiveness for not having the proof.
I've not heard that before. That's a great one. I've not heard that one before. That's excellent.
There you go. I'm probably quoting someone and not crediting them with a quote, but okay. I can't remember who I heard it from. Maybe it's original. I have no idea.
All right, great. Well, look, on that note, we're going to wrap up the show. So thank you very much for coming on. It was great to have you. And thank you very much to everyone for listening. So yeah, that was Health Tech Hour with Hamish Grierson, CEO of Thriver, co-founder. Where do people go if they want to learn more about Thriver?
Thriver.co is our B2C site, and thriversolutions.com is where you'll find our solutions for partners.
Great. Thank you very much for everybody, and we'll be back again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio.